Thanks for joining us for today's edition of the Portland Christian Center podcast. This week, Pastor Joel Slater kicks off our new series, The Gratitude Initiative, with a message titled, Just Do It. Thanks. Now here's Pastor Joel.
Thank you. Two powerful words, isn't it? Thank you. Two words that are powerful, whether they're said or not. You know what I'm talking about. It's powerful when someone says thank you. Dad, can I have a dollar? Dad, can I have $5? Dad, can I have $10? Dad, can I have $20? It gets exhausting after a while. I'm not talking about anybody in particular. But wow, when that dad, can I have $5? And then thank you, daddy. Here, just take it all. Just take it all. They're powerful words. They're also powerful. They're not said, aren't they? You know, we have a tradition in our family. My wife is really good with traditions, and as we're coming up on the holidays, you're going to see the value of traditions in your own family. But she does this tradition where she does the thank you jar, and she sets the bar high because we have to do it all year long. That's the law. And over the course of a year, she sets a time and says, okay, we're going to do this for like the school year or at the end of the school year. So September all the way through June and everything. So we do a thank you jar, and we're supposed to on our own initiative, on our own, you know, not being reminded, but just on our own whim, whenever it moves us, we're supposed to take a slip of paper and write down what we're thankful for, something we're thankful for. And at the end of the year, the goal is to fill the jar with thank you slips, and then we're going to sit down at a special time of dinner, and she makes a special dinner, and hopefully one of those is thank you for the dinner. But we're supposed to go around and just open these up, and we don't say who they're from. We just go through, and we just like identify what we're thankful for. And of course, we sit around the table, and we say, sir, thank you. And we get ones like, thank you for my daddy, because he's just so good looking. And thank you for my daddy for giving me that $5. And there's you know, and then there's always like, thank you for mommy for being so pretty. And thank you for mommy. Yeah, okay. It's not, there's no equal, it's very disproportionate. But those two words are thank you and powerful. When we sit around and we're just reminded of just the impact that we've had on each other's lives or the simple things. But those two words are powerful when they're not said. And this last year, that truth came to reality with me, is that I was busy. I was working on a master's degree. I was working a little harder on some things, a little focused, a little tunnel visioned. And I'd see that jar right next to the coffee maker strategically planted because Amy knew that's the one place in the kitchen I would go. And she just thought, well, if I put it there, then he'll remember and everything. And I would always think, yeah, I need to do that. Yeah, I need to do that. But I just got to do this one more thing first. And so when we sat down at the table and we started going through and picking those out, and it was easy for the kids to say, oh, I wrote that one or I wrote that one. And of course, you know, the handwriting's nice, so we know that which that's mommy's and everything. But then suddenly, as we looked at everyone's pile, like I had one. And I hadn't said thank you very much. And my kids pointed it out. They said, Daddy, aren't you thankful? And I thought, well, of course I'm thankful. But I didn't say it. We're starting a new series today. It's called The Gratitude Initiative. And I'm really excited, and I'm thankful that Pastor Ray is allowing me the chance to kick this off. He's taken some time away. They did not go to Ethiopia. They felt that was the wise thing to do, security-wise. But they said, you know what? We've already got this time away, so we're just going to get away, and that's good for them. And we're thankful that they can, and we're thankful that they allow us to play in their church when they're gone. So we're thankful for that. Things may change after this week, but we'll see. But we're starting this new series called The Gratitude Initiative. And as we focus on this all the month of November and as we hurtle towards the holidays, I want to point out a subtle but deceptive lie that comes hand in hand with this idea of saying thank you and the holidays. And it's a very subtle, but it's a very deceptive lie, and it's this. It's the thought that counts. You see, I thought about saying thank you 100 times. I have plenty to be thankful for. But it's funny how noticeable it was to a group of students around the table, Daddy, aren't you thankful? Well, of course I'm thankful. I'm thankful for your mother who puts up with me. I'm thankful for you who doesn't go around youth group and tell everything that you know about me. Maybe you do. But I'm just thankful for all the many good things in life. But Daddy, you didn't say it. And you've come to find out it's not the thought that counts. And you know, we know that's not true, isn't it? We know the truth of this. I mean, it's nothing new. It's nothing profound. But really, I mean, it sounds nice. It sounds nice. It sounds like an easy out. But try practicing that in real life. Husbands, try practicing. Test this the next time you forget your anniversary. Honey, did you get me something? No, but I thought about it. Oh, it's the thought that counts, right? Parents, try using this statement the next time you miss one of your kids' birthday, or even more powerful, when you forget to put something under the pillow after they've lost a tooth. I had to punt on that one. Why didn't you put something under my pillow? Well, it was a thought. I thought about it last night. It's the thought that counts, right? Students, try using that statement. Maybe you already have, when you forget that major project or assignment at school. Didn't you turn in your homework? No, but I thought about it hard. I thought long and hard about that. Employers, those of you that own businesses, try this the next time you miss payroll. Money talks. People listen. Try using that statement when the IRS comes calling, saying, where's your tax return? Well, I thought about it. I thought about it a lot, and then I changed my mind. And then, just more in line with the holidays, tell your family that when they show up for Thanksgiving and there's no food. It's the thought that counts. It's the thought that counts, right? No. There is no other topic where this lie proves to be so deceptive and yet so hollow than in the area of gratitude. In the area of gratitude. See, the truth is, when it comes to gratitude, it's not the thought that counts. Now, we all like to hear the words thank you, don't you? Thank you, mom and dad. Thank you, honey. Thank you, sir. Thanks, boss. Thanks, employees. Thanks, volunteers. When was the last time you did that? Thanks, nursery workers, for watching our kids and allowing us to come to church. Thanks, children ministry workers, for doing an overnighter Friday night and being up all night and feeding those kids sugar and then reaping the consequences of it so we could have date night. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you, Pastor Ron and Cheryl, for always being so diligent with producing such amazing Christmas concerts. You know, thank you, thank you. Like, we all like to hear the words thank you. But we all know what it's like when we don't hear the words thank you, don't we? And isn't it strange that when we don't remember to say thank you, when we don't remember to say thank you, we certainly don't ever think of ourselves as ungrateful. It's not that I'm ungrateful. Daddy, aren't you thankful? Aren't you thankful for anything? Sounds like you're not very thankful. We never think of that when we forget to say thank you, do we? And, you know, adults really don't tell this to each other. We don't go to you and say, you know what, you're being ungrateful. You know what? You're such an ungrateful person. We usually tell somebody else behind their backs, right? Kids say it. Kids say it to each other. You go to a birthday party, and we tell our kids to do it. We go to a birthday party, and Tommy gives, you know Timmy a present. And what is Timmy supposed to do? You parents, you know what it is. You know, it's that painful, long, drawn-out, painful silence. Come on, say it. Just say it. And Tommy, who's given the present, he's just standing there. He's like, and the mom is like standing there going, Timmy's not unthankful, but we know the pain of it when we don't say it. And then when we get accused of being ungrateful, or we hear from somebody, you know what, they're so ungrateful. They never said thank you for that. They never sent a card. They never sent a note. They never sent an email or a text. They never acknowledged it. They just took it and they moved on. When we're accused of being ungrateful, we feel accused of not feeling something, don't we? Don't you hate that? You're not very grateful. Of course I am. What are you talking about? I didn't mean to. I meant to. I just got busy. I thought about it. But it's not the thought that counts. And we'll go back into our mind, and we'll go back into our memory, and we'll begin to remind ourselves, and we'll begin to rehearse all the ways that we felt grateful in the past, and we'll rehearse all the ways and all the thoughts that we thought, you know, I thought about, oh, I'm so thankful here. If I pause and said thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, I've said it a million times in my head. But it's not the thought that counts. And one of the reasons it's so important, again, we talked about generosity all last month, is that gratitude produces generosity. If you were here last month and you struggled with this topic of radical generosity, can I just call you to stop and pause that the fact that you have any opportunity to be generous in any way is because of what God has done for you. It should unleash generosity. I mean, I'm telling you, when these two little girls, and they're not so little anymore and everything, flash that smile and just, "Daddy, I love you," it's like, oh, gotta go check the budget, because I would give them the world when they're saying thank you. But when we don't say thank you, it's more than silence. The silence is deafening. Because understand this, unexpressed gratitude is almost universally interpreted as ingratitude. When we don't say thank you, sometimes we forget. But over a period of time, that's not just they forgot. Suddenly, that's interpreted as ingratitude. And ingratitude, and everyone forgets, and so we're not talking about perfection here, but over time, if you don't practice gratitude, if it's not cultivated in your life, it's not a natural expression in your life, it's not something that you work at and go after and monitor, over time, it has the potential to do some major damage to your relationships. I mean, think about this. I mean, in this day and age where husbands and wives are both working, I don't know who is the primary breadwinner in your family. Sometimes it's the wife and sometimes the husband. So whoever you are, you don't do it for a thank you, do you? You don't go out and work the job. You don't go out and pursue the career. You don't work wherever you work and everything for the thanks. But over time, if you never hear thanks, and it depends on your love language, some of you are words of affirmation, some of you are gifts, some of you are touch, some are whatever, however you receive thanks in your language, you know, over time, if you don't hear from time to time, you kind of start feeling used, don't you? You kind of start feeling a little bit underappreciated. I'm just the ATM. I'm just the workhorse. I'm just here to bring in the paycheck. You know, you've rehearsed that in your mind. Over time, no one says thank you, then suddenly you feel a little bit used. And what happens when you feel a little bit used? You kind of feel a little bit, there's anger, there's resentment, there's tension. It begins to kind of fester. It's like, that's all you see me as. You don't see me as anything else. Well, what if I didn't have this job? What if I didn't bring in this paycheck? You begin to feel that because you're not hearing any expression of gratitude. You know, for those of you that are homemakers, for those of you that take on the majority of the work in the home, I mean, somebody's got to cook, somebody's got to clean, somebody's got to do laundry. I don't know who it is. Equal opportunity here, folks, and everything. But if that's all you are, if you never, ever hear the word thank you in any way, shape, or form, you start to feel like everyone just takes you for granted. I remember a painful time in my family's life. It was my mom and my dad, and my brother, and I. So three men and a wonderful woman who was working full-time, who was going to school full-time. Our kitchen table was not where we ate dinner. It's where she studied. And she was full-time work and full-time school, and she was going for it. She was making it happen, but she was also, and we never stopped to think about this at the time. It was like, who cooks here? Who cleans here? How does, you know, she once time caught me and said, how do you do laundry? And I said, that's simple. You put it in the hamper, and it comes back on your bed folded. It's a very simple process. And she drew my attention. She drew my father's attention one day. She says, "You see that basket of laundry that's been sitting in the freeway that we call the living room that we pass from? I mean, there's the place that you had to go. You had to cross this point in space in our home to go everywhere, to the kitchen, to the front door, to the upstairs. You had to go right here. And there was a basket full of laundry sitting right there. And somehow, we just assumed that through the power of God, it would transport from downstairs to upstairs. And then the Spirit of God would blow across the face of the house, and it would distribute our clothes everywhere." Very Pentecostal household. But one day, my mother brought it to our attention and said, "How do you think that gets from there to here?" And we did not know. She says, "That basket's been sitting there for a week, and you have passed by time and time again, and no one has ever thought to help." Defining moment in my life. Defining moment in my life. When we withhold gratitude, unexpressed gratitude is seen as ingratitude. If you were to stop me on the street and say, "Man, isn't your mom an amazing person? Isn't your dad?" I would say, "Absolutely, absolutely. What amazing. They sacrificed and they gave and everything." But understand this, there comes a point where unexpressed gratitude is interpreted as ingratitude. And even worse, if we let that slide, if we don't think it's not a big deal, again, if we get too busy, we make excuses for ourselves, then we understand that we'll see that chronic ingratitude is almost universally translated as entitlement. Well, what do you mean I have to say thank you? You're the mom. That's what you're supposed to do. Please don't hit me. I'm just saying what you're thinking sometimes. Well, you're the dad. Aren't you supposed to make the paycheck? You're the student. You're supposed to help around the house and mow the lawn and do the chores and everything. It's like, you know, unexpressed gratitude over time becomes entitlement. You're supposed to do that. And honestly, if we're not in the habit of expressing gratitude to our God, sometimes without knowing it, we can fall into a sense of entitlement. God, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? Why didn't you show up today? Why didn't you make something happen today? And sometimes we need to be reminded that when it comes to unexpressed gratitude, sometimes we get this entitlement. But you just, everyone here was rocked to their core by that song, I Lay Me Down. It's not my own. It all belongs to you, right? Folks, we can't sing that and then think that we're entitled to anything else. Jesus has done everything for us. He has done everything for us. He has moved heaven and hell itself for us. And for us to withhold gratitude or to nurture any little bit of entitlement in our minds is like, well, what have you done for me today, God, that we're slipping into entitlement? So understand this. If you don't understand anything or remember anything else from this message today, understand this. Authentic gratitude. What is gratitude? Authentic gratitude is never silently expressed. It is never silently expressed. It doesn't have to necessarily be your words, because you may not be a words person, but authentic gratitude is never silently expressed. Now, before we get any further, let's just define what gratitude is. Gratitude, for most people, would understand this. It's up on the screen. It's like it is the quality of being thankful, okay, so far. But it's more than that. I was shocked and surprised when I saw the definition of gratitude. It is more than simply the quality of being thankful. It is much more. It is also a readiness to show appreciation for and a readiness to return kindness. It's an action. It's ready to move. And so we want to talk about a gratitude initiative, a readiness to express kindness. What is initiative? One of my favorite words, and my son is picking up this word because it is a word that I value. It is a word that I think will move people, young people. If you will pick up this word, it will take you places in life. It'll take you places in school. It'll take you places in your career. It's initiative. Seeing what needs to be done and doing it. The gratitude initiative, a readiness to express kindness and to show appreciation and return kindness, and the ability to see it that it needs to be done and to do it. Now, if this sounds like work to you, it's not. Research is showing that practicing gratitude is proven to be one of the most reliable methods of increasing happiness and increasing life satisfaction. You just saw the video here, but let me just give you a little bit more data. Practicing gratitude, not just thinking it, but the initiative, seeing what needs to be done and doing it. Practicing gratitude boosts feelings of optimism, of joy, of pleasure, enthusiasm. How many of you would like a little bit more of that in life? In this day and age, could we do with a little bit more optimism? Could we do with a little bit more of joy? But research also shows that practicing gratitude also reduces anxiety and depression. Now, I'm not here to say that depression is not a real thing, but everything. But the reality is like, what are you focusing on? What are you focusing? Are you focusing on what you don't have and overlooking what you do have? Look, I'm telling you that whatever you do have, you have it. That's profound. You've got something. We are a nation of haves, more so than any other nation on the face of the earth. And yet we continually slip into this idea that we don't have. But to practice gratitude, to see what needs to be done, to practice this gratitude can actually alleviate a measure of anxiety and boost people out of a level of depression. Practicing gratitude strengthens the immune system. It lowers blood pressure. It reduces symptoms of illness and makes us less bothered by aches and pains. And it's free. Practicing gratitude helps with better sleep. So I guess a way of saying this is count your blessings instead of sheep. Practicing gratitude makes us more resilient. It's been found to actually help people recover from traumatic events, including Vietnam War veterans with PTSD. There's that I've never been a soldier, but I've heard the stories of soldiers, and why am I alive and he's not? I can't answer that question. But the fact is, you are alive. You are alive, and God's got a purpose for you. He's got more for you than to sit and ask the question, why am I not alive? Oh, you are alive. Let's focus on doing something with that. Gratitude strengthens relationships. Gratitude makes us feel more committed to friends. I'm so glad. I don't have many friends, but I'm glad for the friends I do. I'm glad that they want to be my friends, and I should tell them more. But it makes us feel more committed to friends and your romantic partners. Couples, get this. Here's a little love lesson for you. Couples who feel and express gratitude to each other become more satisfied with their relationship. Guys, you may be on a budget, but it doesn't cost anything to tell your wife that you love her and why. Take the initiative. Take the initiative. Ladies, men never feel more powerful and strong and confident than when you thank them for whatever it is that they're doing. I remember working a job, and I just want to pause on this. I worked a job for 6 months. I sat on this platform. I was desperately in need of a job, and I sat there, and David Ming was right in front of me. David Ming had hired me as a student in college, and I set the record for the most expensive crash in company history, and he still hired me back. I'm thankful for that. I sat there 12 years ago on this platform during a rehearsal, and I was expressing my need to someone about needing a job. David turned to me, knowing full well what I had done, and he goes, Joel, you need a job. And I go, yes, I need a job. He gave me a job which paid for a baby. It paid expenses for 6 months. And I'm so thankful for that. But as I worked that job, it wasn't the job I wanted, but it was the job I had. And I was like wondering, God, have you left me? Have you forgotten me? I'm thankful for this job. I'm thankful for the work. I'm thankful for the paycheck. But God, I'm not where I want to be. It's not what I want to do. I should be doing more with my life. Oh, come on, God, have you left me? And I opened my lunch, and there was a note from my wife. And she opened this door, and I'll remember it for the day I die. She says, Joel, thank you so much for doing whatever is necessary for me and our girls. Oh, yeah. I'll tell you, it didn't cost anything, but it was huge. It was huge. Gratitude. You think I felt closer to her? You think I would do anything for her? You betcha, because of a little expressed gratitude. And it may even encourage a more equitable division of labor between partners. When you stop and say thank you for that laundry, if you start to stop and say thank you for that work, thank you for fixing the car, thank you for going to get gas, thank you for picking up your underwear, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Whatever it takes. I'm just trying to cover the gamut here. And you do it, seeing what needs to be done and doing it, you realize, dude, this is hard. This is hard. Amy went on a trip. She asked me, and like, what am I going to say? I'm not going to say no. She went on a trip, and so we had three kids at the time. I had a little one. Everything, and I was supposed to go grocery shopping. So I have the three kids, and think it was that hard. You know, as you go grocery shopping and everything. She comes back. Yeah, yeah. That was a long time ago. She comes back, and the first things out of my mouth is, I will sell a kidney for marriage counseling. Don't ever leave me. That's a hard job. That's a hard job. But seeing what needs to be done and doing it, gratitude does amazing things. Gratitude even promotes forgiveness amongst ex-spouses after divorce. You know, there may not be a lot to be thankful for that in marriage, but if you have kids, those kids are a gift. And you can't focus on the negative. You focus, I'm so thankful. I'm not thankful for the experience. I'm not thankful for that other thing, but I've got these kids. That something good came out of that. Gratitude can promote forgiveness and set you free from that. And gratitude is good for students. It's really good for students. Studies have shown that when 10 to 19-year-olds practice gratitude, they report greater life satisfaction and more positive emotions. But most importantly, more important than all that, those are just benefits, but more importantly, the ability to notice and then to express gratitude is one of the most fundamental signs of God's presence in your life. It is one of the most fundamental signs of God's presence in your life. And so that's why we want to take 30 days and start and focus on this series called the Gratitude Initiative, to see what needs to be done and doing it. Because the reality is, like it or not, expression always overrules intention. Hey, you may think you're grateful, you may feel you're grateful, but at the end of the day, expression, what you actually express, overrules what you intend every day of the week. And the issue of how gratitude is expressed is so important that it's illustrated in one of the most famous stories of the Bible. So I want you to look at Luke chapter 7 today. Luke chapter 7. And we're going to look at verses 36 through 50 today. And as you're finding your Bible and looking for that space right now, Luke has become one of my favorite gospels. Luke is not just where you read the Christmas story. Luke is an amazing gospel. Luke is a gospel for every man. Luke is the gospel that touches on so many of the needs and the concerns of our day. Luke is the most Pentecostal of the gospels. Luke is the gospel that highlights the moving of the Spirit more than all the other gospels. Not saying the Spirit's not in those gospels, but Luke constantly talks about the leading of the Spirit, the prompting of the Spirit. Luke talks about prayer more than any other gospel, that every time there was a major decision in Jesus' life, he prayed preemptively for it. But as we're going to see today, Luke was also the gospel that was concerned about the poor, the impoverished, and the marginalized. And in this day and age where we see the need is so great, folks, the world is looking to us, who we claim to have the truth, and saying, what are you going to do? And Luke's gospel says that if you have Jesus, you are moved with compassion. If you have Jesus, you're going to not just see what needs to be done, you're not just going to think you need to do something, you're not just going to feel it, but you're going to do something about it. Because Jesus did something about it. And so this story, one of the most famous stories in the whole Bible, involves two characters alongside of Jesus that Jesus compares and contrasts, who provide a clear illustration between those who think they are grateful and those who truly are grateful. So look with me, I'm just going to lead you and kind of play tour guide in this section of Scripture. Luke chapter 7, verses 36 through 50, starting with verse 36. And it says in this story, when one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him, Jesus went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. Okay, so I'm just going to point out some things here. When one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him, Jesus went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. We don't know why this Pharisee invited Jesus to dinner. It's very interesting that a Pharisee would invite Jesus to dinner. The Pharisees were like the Navy SEALs of biblical doctrine. They knew the Bible front to back. They knew, they were very careful about their doctrine. They were very careful about what the Bible said, the Scriptures said, and they weren't always friends with Jesus. There were some exceptions. At this point in the story, we don't know what he is, but we're going to see some characteristics of what he thought about Jesus in a few minutes. But regardless of his motivation, and we don't really think it was all that positive, but he still did it. Maybe he liked the idea of Jesus whose fame in Galilee was growing. He's moving around Galilee. He's doing some miracles earlier in this chapter. He's healed the centurion's servant. He didn't even have to go to the centurion's house. The centurion just said, hey, if you just speak the word, my servant will be healed. And when he gets back, he is healed. So he's done that miracle. And then the following story is that Jesus is passing through a little town called Nain, and he comes on a funeral procession, and he sees a child who has died, and he raises this child to life. You'd think word gets around. And so Jesus has done some pretty miraculous things. So this Pharisee, quite possibly, is like, you know what? This might be a handy guy to have around sometimes. This might be a guy I may want to kind of network with. And so he brings Jesus into his home for dinner. But at the same time, verse 37, it says, a woman in that town who lived a sinful life learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, so she came there with an alabaster jar of perfume. Now, it says right there in the Scriptures, the woman was a bad woman. She was a notoriously bad woman. She was a woman in the town who lived a sinful life. And it's interesting that she got to come to this Pharisee's house for dinner. Now, the first I thought about is like, well, she pushed her way in. She just weaseled her way in, like nothing's going to stop her. But it's interesting that in that culture, anyone, if you had a dinner with kind of a celebrity or anything, anybody could come, and they could come to the dinner. Now, they couldn't sit at the table, but they could sit in the back, and they could kind of watch it. They could smell it. They could kind of like, oh, that looks good. I'll have to check the dumpster out back afterwards. But she got in. And she was known. She wasn't invisible. She wasn't a stranger. People knew who she was, and they knew what she was up to. They knew the reputations of her life. But no doubt she had heard about Jesus. Word gets around. She had heard about what he'd done with the centurion. She had heard what he had done with the raising of the dead. She'd heard other things about him. And she realized that with Jesus, there might be some hope that can lift her up out of her ways. And it also says, it's interesting there, the detail, that when she came, she didn't come empty-handed. She came with a little vial of what they call an alabaster of perfume around her neck. And that was a very common thing in those days, but it was one of someone's most precious possession. Probably most likely they were very costly. They cost an enormous amount of money, and so they would carry that around with her. That was their most precious gift. And verse 38 says, and as she stood behind him at his feet, weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Now, and then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. Now, a couple of things on this. Recognize that, again, you've heard different stories of the practice of washing feet. These men have been walking around a long, long time. How many tears do you think is enough to wet someone's feet, enough to wash them? This is not a little tear down the cheek. This is not a couple of little streaming tears. This is profuse sobbing for a long period of time. She soaked this guy's feet. And then, what does it say? She wiped them with her hair. For a Jewish woman to appear with hair down was an act of the gravest immodesty. She's not doing herself any favors here. She's already relationally and reputation-wise behind, but she doesn't care. She doesn't care about what other people think. She doesn't care what other how people rate her. They don't care how what if she's right or wrong. She doesn't care. She's in the presence of Jesus. And she responds by weeping, and then she lets down her hair, and then she kisses them. Think about doing that. And then she pours perfume. She breaks the vial, her precious gift, and she gives it all to Jesus. And the fact is that this expression of love that this woman did in public showed that she had forgotten anybody and anything, and she was solely focused on Jesus. Now understand this. You can pull two things out of here. Number one, gratitude is the gateway to a divine audience. Psalm 100 verse 4 says, I will enter his gates with thanksgiving in my heart. I will enter his courts with praise. I don't enter his courts and then start thanking him. I come ready. I take the initiative to express appreciation and ready to show a kindness as I come into his presence. I don't know if you appreciate, I don't know if you thank, and he's not looking for it. But the reality is that when we come in every week, do you notice that we start with praise and worship? That's just not something because that's what you do. That is intentional to get you ready to cast off all the fears and doubts and frustrations and all the habits and hangups that you brought in here and drop them and come face to face with Jesus Christ, who has done everything for you. I will enter his gates with thanksgiving in my heart. Gratitude is the gateway into an audience with the divine. But as you see, more poignantly for our series, is that gratitude always creates an opportunity and always generates generosity. Imagine this, the expression of gratitude. Jesus hasn't done anything for her yet. Jesus hasn't talked to her. Jesus hasn't acknowledged her at this point in the story. Simply, she has heard about Jesus. She has seen what Jesus has done. And she's like, oh my word, if he does it for them, maybe he could do it for me. I mean, he responded to a Gentile. He's responded to others. Again, the whole theme of the book of Luke is Jesus going to the lepers and the outcasts and the poor and the forgotten. And if Jesus can do that for them, maybe he can do it for me. That's the kind of person Jesus is. I want to go there. I'm so thankful that there's someone around here that will listen to me and receive me and not turn me away. And so gratitude creates this opportunity. And I'm here to ask you today, when was the last time you intentionally took the initiative to show gratitude to Jesus and experienced that wonderful opportunity where he showed up in a powerful way? Where you were bitter or frustrated about your place in life, but you stopped and somehow God gave you a reminder, a little bit of a reminder of what he's done for you, his generosity to you, and suddenly that broke the chains of frustration, and that was an antidote to that bitter pill that you had swallowed, and suddenly, I'm set free. I'm set free. Gratitude always creates an opportunity, and gratitude always generates generosity. But not everyone recognizes that. Verse 39, when a Pharisee who had invited him to this dinner saw this, He said to himself, he didn't say it to Jesus, didn't express it, but in his head, he said, if this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she is a sinner. Oh. Oh. Now, again, we don't know why this Pharisee invited him. But if Jesus showed up for dinner at my house, I'd be grateful. I'm just saying. If any celebrity showed up at my table, I'd be a little bit grateful. This guy does not know who he has at his table. He has no clue. Being ungrateful is a slippery slope, folks. Being ungrateful, you don't start out, again, everyone forgets. It's not that I'm not grateful, sometimes you just forget, but if you forget often enough, it becomes a slippery slope. It leads to entitlement. Well, of course Jesus showed up. Doesn't he know I'm a good person? Doesn't he know what I've accomplished for him? Doesn't he know what I do for him? Doesn't he know what a good person I am? Of course he blesses me. Of course. But entitlement leads eventually to arrogance. And arrogance leads to isolation. And isolation leads to alienation. And Jesus knows this. Verse 40, look at this. Simon, the Pharisee did not say anything, but he thought something. And Jesus, being more than a prophet, again, this guy does not know who is in his midst. Jesus proves who he is by saying, Simon, I have something to tell you. And I don't know, the verse that continues says, tell me, teacher. And I'm sitting there, I kind of wanted to add my little caveat, uh-oh. Jesus said, hey, Simon, can I ask you a question? Hey, Simon, mind if I bring something up? No, Simon, I have something to tell you. Whoa. This is revelatory. This statement is actually revelatory. Because Simon, again, someone who knows everything about God, who knows the Bible, who knows doctrine, who knows, for all his theological understanding, is blind to the fact of who Jesus is. Oh, he may know of God, but he does not recognize God in his midst. And by reading his mind, Jesus proves that I'm not just any prophet. You were hoping for a prophet, but you got God in your midst. And this should remind all of us that God knows our motives. God knows the authenticity of our measures of gratitude. God knows our excuses. God knows our reasons. God knows our thoughts. So we're not fooling anybody. Well, God knows I'm grateful. God knows I'm grateful. Prove it. Prove it. So Jesus proves it. And he gives an example. He says, verse 41, Two people owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed him 500 denarii and the other 50. And if you want to do a conversion rate, basically, you can convert it to either one owed him 500 days of wages and the other one 50 days. Now, some of you may say 50 days, no big deal. Why don't you go ahead and miss 50 days of pay and see how big a deal it is to you? Whether it's a little or a lot, it's a big deal. And it's going on, verse 42 says, neither of these two, whether they owed 500 days of wages or 50 days of wages, had the money to pay him back, so he forgave the debts of both. Now, which of them will love him more? Which will love him more? And Jesus is saying, at this point in the story, imagine the appreciation and love that would flow from one who had been forgiven such a great debt. Can I ask you, regardless of whether you followed Jesus your whole life or maybe you just came to Christ recently, has Jesus forgiven you of something? Has Jesus forgiven you of something? Maybe you weren't old enough to do anything wrong, but you did something or you have done something that no one else knows. And have you gone so long without thanking Jesus? You don't have to pay that price. You don't have to repent again. You don't have to get saved again. But at the end of the day, do you ever stop when you're focusing on what you don't have and say, you know what? I'm going to show some gratitude for what I do have, and what I do have is I've been set free from something. I've been forgiven for something. I've been accepted in spite of something. That's powerful. Regardless, imagine the appreciation and love that flows from one who's been forgiven a great debt. And reality is this, whether you owe 500 or 50, the debtor has no bargaining position. Regardless of how little or how much, you are in no position to bargain. Only grace allows the debt to be removed. You can't do it on your own, no matter how little or big. The Bible says, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. My sin is no greater or no less than your sin. It still keeps me separated from God. And so it's up to God to show me grace to forgive me. And Simon, being smart and knowing what the right answer is, says, I suppose the one who had the bigger debt forgiven. And Jesus gives him a pat on the head. You have judged correctly. Good job. But again, it's not the thought, it's not even the answer that counts. Great forgiveness provides the opportunity for great love and great gratitude to be expressed. And here's where Jesus goes and just drops a bomb on a contrast between the two attitudes. He says, you know what? You're not going to get out of that quickly. Here's the reality. You may have thought, well, I'm grateful you're here. Well, I'm grateful that I've got a prophet in my midst. Yes, I'm grateful for whatever God has done to me or done for me. But verse 44 is where I see the major catalyst for galvanizing gratitude. He says, then he turned to the woman. This is Jesus. He turned to the woman. Can you imagine? Just picture in your mind. They've been having this conversation. I don't think this woman has stopped crying. It doesn't say she stops crying. She just keeps going. And she continues to weep, and she continues to dry off. I don't know how much dirt there was on his feet. I don't know how hard it was. I don't know what was happening at this point, but it doesn't sound like she stopped at all. And he turns to her. Jesus is lying on his couch, the way they did it, and he looks at her. He's making eye contact with her, but he's talking to Simon the Pharisee. He says, do you see this woman? I came into your house, and you didn't even give me any water for my feet. That was expected. You invited someone into your house. That was expected. The culture said you will at least wash someone's feet. And you didn't do it, Simon. You, the Pharisee, you, the one that knows it all. You know what is right, what is wrong, what is correct behavior. You didn't do it. But she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. Verse 45, you did not give me a kiss. In that culture, that's just a way of greeting. That was an acknowledgement. That's like, you're personally welcome. Not, yeah, you're in. This was a personal greeting. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman from the time I entered has not stopped kissing my feet. Verse 46, you did not put oil on my head. Put a little oil on my head, a little drop of oil. You could afford it. But she poured perfume on my feet. She gave it all. Simon, the Pharisee, had no conscious need. He had no conscious need of his need. He wasn't even aware, wasn't even thinking. And therefore, he felt no love. He didn't seek any forgiveness. And he certainly didn't show gratitude. Simon's impression of himself, the Pharisee's impression of herself, was that he's a good man in the sight of God, in the sight of men. So he felt no need to express any gratitude. You're just lucky I let you show up. Hey, you're lucky I'm here. You're lucky I show up. You're lucky I volunteer at all. You're lucky, you know, I give. You're lucky, 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 lucky. Wow. And we don't think that. We don't even feel that. But again, unexpressed gratitude is a form of rejection. I don't need it. I don't need you. And when gratitude doesn't spring up in our hearts, when we recognize, when we sing about, when we look at, when we nod, when we verbally acknowledge, yes, God is good, but when gratitude doesn't spring up in our hearts at that moment, it probably means that we're unwilling to just simply pay him a compliment, to acknowledge what he has done. And we may not want to magnify him as our benefactor. Folks, the reality is when we hold back generosity, when we hold back anything from him, what we're really saying is, you know what, I can do this on my own. But can you? Do you want to even try? Someone once said, at the root of all ingratitude, at the root of all ungratefulness is the love of one's own greatness. On the one hand, Simon thought he was great all on his own. I don't need to be thankful for anything. But on the other hand, this woman was conscious of nothing else than an urgent need, was conscious of nothing else but the overwhelming sense of love for one who could supply that need. And she expressed her gratitude so profoundly and extravagantly that even people who have never read the Bible, who don't believe in its validity, who don't believe in its authority, know this story. They know the story of the woman who anointed Jesus' feet. It's that profound. It's that profound an expression of gratitude. And verse 47 says, therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, as her great love has shown. Don't be fooled. She didn't get her sins forgiven because what she did, she knew her sins were forgiven, and she expresses that. This is an expression of what has already taken place. And for whoever has been forgiven little, loves little. In In other words, gratitude begins where my sense of entitlement ends. John Piper said, genuine gratitude admits that we are beneficiaries of an unearned gift, that we're cripples leaning on the cross-shaped crutch of Jesus Christ, that we are paralytics living minute by minute in the iron lung of God's mercy, that we are children asleep in heaven's stroller. I love that. Like it or not, that's what we are. And so all of this, again, he's looking at the woman. He's talking to Simon, and for the first time, he suddenly makes eye contact. He looks at this lady, and he actually speaks words to her. Verse 48 said, Jesus said to her, your sins are forgiven. Now, maybe she could have walked, without saying that, maybe she would have walked away and said, I think I'm good. I think I'm good to go. I think this was good. But again, unexpressed gratitude is not received. Authentic gratitude is expressed gratitude. And so Jesus gives her a gift. Hey, just in case you were wondering, just in case your sins are forgiven. Verse 49 says, well, actually, the statement reveals a common struggle for us if we don't practice gratitude. We're unable to see Jesus for who he truly is. The other guests, verse 49 says, the other guests began to say among themselves, who is this who even forgives sins? Arrogant people, ungrateful people live with an enormous sense of self-sufficiency. I find it interesting that you'll never find an arrogant person who is grateful at the same time. But you'll never find a humble person who is ungrateful at the same time. John Piper went on to say, natural man hates to think of himself in these images as an unworthy beneficiary, a cripple, paralytic, and child. These images rob human beings of all their glory by giving it all to God. Therefore, while a man loves his own glory and prizes his self-sufficiency and hates to think of himself as sin-sick and helpless, he will never feel any genuine gratitude to the true God and so will never magnify God, but only himself. Ouch. I don't want to be that kind of person. I don't ever want to fool myself and withhold gratitude to the point that I think that I have any capability of myself. And folks, I'm telling you, this may strike at the root of your pride, but you know what? Pride will never get you anywhere. It'll get you somewhere, but it won't get you all the way. I don't want to be that person that withholds gratitude for something that I never earned on my own. Verse 50, Jesus said to the woman, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. Jesus identifies her early expression of love, again, as evidence of her saving faith, not the mechanism which she attains it. And her story, this famous story, shows that any sinner who can know God, who can recognize God and respond to his invitation for salvation, will respond when they turn to him. When it comes to gratitude, expression overrules intention every time. So, stop for a moment and reflect on what Jesus has done for you. I don't know your story. I don't know where you came from. I don't know what you were like. I don't know what you're like now. But stop and reflect on what Jesus has done for you. And let me ask you this question. Are you grateful? Are you grateful? Are you grateful? Are you grateful? Prove it. Prove it. How do you prove it? William Arthur Ward said, feeling gratitude and not expressing it is like wrapping a present and not giving it. Gratitude, the ability of being thankful and having the readiness to show appreciation for and return kindness. The quality of feeling grateful. You sound like you're halfway there. But are you ready to go the other half? Are you ready to have the readiness to show appreciation for and return kindness? We're talking about a gratitude initiative. Seeing what needs to be done and then doing it.
Thanks again for listening to this week's edition of the Portland Christian Center podcast. If you want more information about the ministries of Portland Christian Center or have a prayer need, please visit us online at pcctoday.com. Thanks for listening.